Court. The second case for oral argument this morning is Clint Boyer, appellant versus Custom Cycles Appellee. For the appellant, we have Mr. Alex Hagan, an attorney from Sioux Falls. And for the appellee, we have Mr. Jack Thieler and Mr. Justin Ludens, attorneys for Mitchell. And Mr. Thieler, I understand you'll be presenting this morning. Okay. Very well. Mr. Hagan, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, and may it please the court, counsel. This case presents important questions about the limits of a state's power to assert jurisdiction over a non-resident defendant in civil litigation. Every citizen has a due process right under the 14th Amendment not to be hailed into the courts of a foreign jurisdiction unless that citizen has formed sufficient minimum contacts with the foreign state.
It might be helpful if you would go into those minimum contacts, the facts, a little bit for a minute or two.
Yes. I think the most salient fact about this is the breach of contract action, but there is no written contract. There is an agreement, a handshake agreement, that arose between Clint Boyer, our client, who is a resident of North Carolina, and a professional race car driver. And there was a conversation at a NASCAR event in November 2008 between Clint Boyer and Brian Clock, who is the principal of Clockworks, a company in Mitchell, South Dakota, who performs customization work on motorcycles. And out of that original conversation arose a trade-out, whereby Mr. Boyer would provide a motorcycle to Mr. Clock. Mr. Clock would perform certain customization work in order that the motorcycle would look like Mr. Boyer's 1949 Mercury Coupe. And in exchange, Mr. Boyer would provide Mr. Clock with access to certain behind-the-scenes NASCAR events, all of which took place outside South Dakota. Every action that Mr. Boyer took in furtherance of that handshake agreement occurred out of state. In January of 2009, a Harley-Davidson motorcycle was purchased in Mankato, Minnesota. In February of 2009, after Clock had performed work in Mitchell, he brought the bike to Florida at the Daytona Speedway track for a NASCAR event. It was at that time that Mr. Boyer provided his consideration for part of their handshake agreement. He provided Mr. Clock and his friends with special access to the NASCAR race. He arranged it for Mr. Clock to drive the motorcycle on the Daytona Speedway so it could be recorded and used for his promotional, for his business. And he also participated in certain media events with a publicity shoot. All of this occurred in Florida in February 2009. And that was what Mr. Boyer agreed to do. Then Mr. Clock brought the motorcycle to Mr. Boyer's residence in North Carolina. That would be the contemplated delivery of it, but the work wasn't completed. He brought it back to South Dakota, did additional customization and authorizations, returned the bike to Mr. Boyer in North Carolina in April 2009. And at that time, he completed performance by delivering the then completed bike in North Carolina in April 2009. Approximately 6 months later, in December, Mr. Boyer received a bill, and that was the first time, it's his understanding, there was ever going to be any requirement other than the trade out that was part of the original agreement. That is a disputed fact, and I don't think it necessarily is to be considered in the context of this.
Were there any witnesses to the oral contract you referenced, or was it just the two of them?
In the record, I think they both recall a conversation. There's no witnesses adduced in the record as to what the witness said. I don't think there's a lot of disputed facts at issue. There's a dispute as to the characterization and the significance, but if you look at their two affidavits in terms of the dates, where they met, and so on, every conversation they had in person was outside South Dakota. And of course, the minimum contacts analysis requires that there be activities directed to the forum, activities directed to South Dakota. The undisputed facts show that Clint Boyer never set foot in South Dakota at any time for any purpose relating to this agreement. The undisputed facts also show that this agreement arose out of the conversation in Phoenix, Arizona, and that when these two individuals interacted, it was beyond the borders of our state. The circuit court, despite these facts, concluded that minimum contacts existed. And it did so, we think, based on a mistaken premise, that clocks work in the forum on the motorcycle constitute contacts of Boyer for purposes of the personal jurisdiction analysis. And we've called this the theory of vicarious jurisdiction. It's inconsistent with this court's analysis in Marshke versus Rodislaw. And I think just as importantly, it flatly contradicts Walden versus Fiore, a 2014 decision from the Supreme Court of the United States. Again, every citizen enjoys a due process right under the 14th Amendment, so we don't just ask what are the contacts, but whether the assertion of jurisdiction over a non-resident comports with the constitutional requirements under the 14th Amendment.
What about the texts and emails and that type of communications that were either directed by Boyer or one of Boyer's agents into South Dakota?
The circuit court concluded that if it was just the basis of the text, that would be insufficient, and that's consistent with Eighth Circuit precedent that we've cited. There were texts alleged by Mr. Clock, they weren't produced, the same with email, relating to the design process and whether the bike looked like it was supposed to. If you look at Exhibit A and Exhibit B of Mr. Sanford's affidavit, the agent that sent the email, there's no affiliation with Mr. Boyer other than the subject line at that time. So we would dispute the premise that he was an agent. We don't think under hearsay that it would be established as, you know, speaking for an attribution of Mr. Boyer. But I think more importantly, in this court's decision from Frankenfeld, you found that the unilateral activity of a third party, whether it's Mr. Phillips or Mr. Boyer's brother, aren't the defendant's contacts for purposes of the personal jurisdiction. The connection must be created by the defendant's suit-related contacts and not the contacts of another person. If you look at page 8 of our original brief, it sets forth what I consider the court's rationale, and it's an excerpt. And it's clear that the court based its decision, I think, on two things: the fact that Clock did work here, and the fact that the motorcycle was here. In this court's decision in Marshke, you identified two principles that sort of drove the three-prong analysis. And there's no dispute here that this is a specific jurisdiction case. If jurisdiction exists, it must derive from or relate to Mr. Boyer's activities directed at the state. He didn't do business here, there's no general jurisdiction. But in Marshke, you said the existence of a contract with a South Dakota citizen isn't sufficient to justify personal jurisdiction on its own. And you relied upon the Third Circuit case, General Electric, to note that specific jurisdiction frequently depends on physical contacts with the forum. So I think the meat and the core of this court's jurisprudence is based on physical contacts with the forum, and email and telephone, even if they could be attributed to Mr. Boyer, which I don't think is available on Frankenfeld, don't reach that level of what the Supreme Court has called a substantial connection based on the defendant's suit-related conduct. There is the allegation that it occurred. I think that suffices, that's true, but that doesn't suffice to rise to the level of minimum contacts.
Well, what about, how would you compare that to the communications we found sufficient in Dactronics?
In Dactronics, many of those communications arose in Brookings. The contract arose from forum visit by the consultant. There was a contract that was discussed, and the relationship was discussed, and then there was a contract that was partially executed in Brookings. And then the subsequent reports back from the consultant all related to the business. So I think it was an ongoing business relationship like that in the Burger King case from the Supreme Court, and not a one-shot deal like this court described the transaction in Marshke. This is a one-shot deal. It was the motorcycle for the services.
Well, I guess it depends on what you call a one-shot deal. The motorcycle went back and forth a couple times to get it right or fixed or tuned up or whatever you call it. And so, I mean, this went on over a period of how long?
The conversation was in November 2008. The bike was purchased in January 2009. The bike, the second time, was delivered in April 2009. So 4 months in terms of when Brian Klock took possession of the bike in Minnesota, and then Brian Klock, or I guess his associates, delivered it to Clint Boyer in North Carolina. But I also think that the intent, the benefit of the bargain that Clint Boyer expected was the delivery of the bike in North Carolina. So the interceding events, what he bargained for was the delivery of the completed bike in North Carolina. And that the fact that it took longer than anticipated was it just prolonged the period. It didn't prolong the basis of the transaction or what the two parties had exchanged. So I think it's more consistent with Marshke, in which this court found that the sale of a car in Montana, the fact that the car was then brought into South Dakota, wasn't contacts as against the seller. And at every moment that this bike was in South Dakota, it was in the possession of Brian Klock or Klockworks for the purpose of performing the work. Those aren't defendant's contacts. Those aren't defendant's activities. And I think Walden versus Fiore concluded that it's impermissible under the 14th Amendment for the plaintiff's contacts to drive the jurisdictional analysis. And the Supreme Court, and this is a 9-0 decision, Justice Thomas's decision, everyone joined it, stated as follows: however significant the plaintiff's contacts with the forum may be, those contacts cannot be decisive in determining whether the defendant's due process rights are violated. And I think the circuit court made that mistake in looking at work performed on Klock's half of the ledger in South Dakota and treating those as contacts for Boyer when there were no such contacts. This was a single isolated transaction that grew out of negotiations in Arizona. Boyer's performance was in Florida, and the final completion for Klock was delivery of the bicycle in North Carolina. And I think that's consistent with the general principles applied by this court in Marshke. And of course, there's three prongs. Did the defendant purposefully avail himself of the benefits and protections of South Dakota? Is a cause of action arrived directly from the defendant's activities in the forum? And third, was a substantial connection created with the forum based on the defendant's activities? It can't just be a substantial connection because Brian Klock works here. That's the type, or does his work here. That's the type of attenuated and fortuitous and random connections that the Supreme Court and this court found insufficient. You know, as far as Clint Boyer was concerned, the delivery of the bike in North Carolina when it was done was what he expected to get out of this bargain. Whether it happened in South Dakota, in Iowa, in Nebraska, was no difference to him.
But your client clearly knew the bike work was going to be done in South Dakota.
I think we'd have to concede that based on the conversations. I don't know that that's true in the record, but we concede that. But in the FastPath versus Arbella case, the case that we provided the court decided in July 2014, knowledge that work is done in South Dakota isn't contacts for the defendant. If that were the case, then the existence of a contract with the South Dakotan would automatically mean that there's personal jurisdiction. So it's not the knowledge that the work was done here, it's whether there was activities directed at the forum. And again, I think if you look at the excerpt from the hearing transcript, the circuit court's, the gist of his analysis was that, well, the work was done here, but it wasn't work performed by our client, and it was certainly but a step in the final process and the final performance, which is delivery of the completed bike. But we don't dispute that, you know, Brian Klock did work here. All of the performance that Clint Boyer offered to perform and did perform occurred in Florida at the Florida racetrack during the NASCAR event. The nature of any contact that Boyer had with the forum was always filtered through Klock, who possessed the motorcycle at all times it was in South Dakota. Neither the quantity nor the quality of Boyer's contacts with South Dakota are sufficient to justify jurisdiction. And the court's decision based on a theory of vicarious jurisdiction, where the defendant can be hailed into the forum because plaintiff did work here, is directly and expressly repudiated in Walden versus Fiore.
You said there wasn't sufficient contact with South Dakota. How much more contact would there have to be in order for South Dakota to have jurisdiction?
Well, I think this court in Marshke says physical presence is frequently required. So if the defendant's not physically present, you know, that is frequently a factor. But this court has also said there's no talisman, there's no formal conceptual one size fits all. But, you know, as a counterexample, if part of Boyer's performance was to come to Sturgis and do some type of promotional activity for Clint Boyer where he's physically present, you know, I think that we may have a different argument and we'd have a different discussion, but that's certainly not the case here. He's only present out of state. The bike was purchased out of state, and any time it was in state, it was in Clock's custody and possession. So I think the counterexample may give the court some flavor for what that would look like, but there is no definitive test. This is a constitutional right, and we think it's important to emphasize two things. This court exercises de novo review. It's based on affidavits. There's no testimony to the circuit court, so the record before you is the record before the circuit court. We recognize that if there are disputed facts, they are seen in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, but that does not mean that the burden shifts to the defendant. The burden to establish jurisdiction always sits with the plaintiff. And we don't think they met it here because there's a lack of sufficient context. I'd refer the court to Miller versus Weber, which is the case of New Mexico cattle seller did not actually bring the cattle into the forum. I think that's another case in addition to Marshke versus Radislaw, where the court's analysis bears out where the circuit court went wrong. Unless the court has other questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Well, the circuit court didn't actually say vicarious. The circuit court didn't call it that.
No.
You're characterizing it.
Correct.
Okay.
The circuit court didn't say vicariously the plaintiff's contacts are grounds upon which to hail the defendant in South Dakota. But if you look at the excerpt, it's clear that he repeatedly emphasizes the work was done here. The work was done here. But it wasn't. That wasn't Clint Boyer's performance, so we think that's mistaken. And Walden versus Fiore lays it out. I think that the opinion makes clear that you cannot hail or bootstrap jurisdiction over the defendant based on the plaintiff's contacts.
Any other questions for counsel? Okay, counsel.
Thank
no
you.
One's ever chastised for quitting early. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Thieler, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, Mr. Hagan, Jack Thieler representing Clockworks, a local Mitchell business. A couple of my clients are here present today, kind of to emphasize the importance for them. We're here on behalf of Clockworks to ask for their day in court. There has been no testimony as to what the agreement is, and I do agree with Mr. Hagan as it's not important for the purpose of this Supreme Court argument or this case. I enjoy always looking at the Supreme Court history, and I kind of was struck today in the very early 70s. I appeared in front of five justices for the first time, and I was scared to death. And I think historically at that time, the South Dakota Supreme Court was known as one of the oldest sitting appellate courts in the state of South Dakota. And as a young lawyer, prior to mandatory retirement, I couldn't figure out why justices would continue to sit on a bench or stay in the profession. Now I find myself about their age, and I can't imagine anyone of sound mind leaving the profession. So my plea today, or my hope, is at the end of my argument, you feel like I'm still of sound mind. Standard of review, I agree with Mr. Hagan that it becomes extremely important. There are 22 undisputed facts, as found by Judge Smith. Applying all the cases that have been already referred to today and referred to in the briefs, and all the facts as found by the court inside those two affidavits, Judge Smith properly applied the facts. He found appropriately under the right law, and the inferences are directly, appropriately followed and and we're entitled to those inferences of all the facts, the 22 facts as found by the court. So I want to take going to Chief Justice Gilbertson's inquiry right to the facts, and where is South Dakota on the defendant's action, Clint Boyer, in the state of South Dakota? The three individuals in that conversation, Clint Boyer's brother, Mr. Phillips, and Clint Boyer in Phoenix, Arizona. The question of are they agents or not agents, they were all in the conversation when the start of the discussion about an oral agreement took place. That's Phoenix, Arizona. Okay, now, following that, and as found by Judge Smith, a substantial part of the agreement, albeit oral, was put together in the state of South Dakota following all these texts and emails and written communications by Mr. Phillips, by Mr. Boyer himself, Clint Boyer, and by Clint Boyer's brother, Casey Boyer, the people in the conversation. So the agreement was put together over a series of weeks by all these communications coming into the state of South Dakota. So we have a Phoenix, Arizona preliminary discussion. Mr. Boyer buys the bike in Mankato, Minnesota. So now we got the state of Minnesota. Mr. Boyer directs that bike into the state of South Dakota. In fact, asks Clockworks to go to Mankato and bring the bike in. So we're back to Mitchell, South Dakota, Davison County, South Dakota, after a series of communications before the bike was received and after the bike was received. Clint Boyer and all the people involved with his company and his racing team directed exactly how this bike was going to be worked on, and it's Clint Boyer's direction and actions at the state of South Dakota. Now Clint Boyer directs that Clockworks take the bike to Daytona, Florida. In Daytona, Florida, this Clint Boyer, as a NASCAR driver, he's in all 50 states. He and his company is nationwide. And so now the bike goes to Daytona, Florida. It's driven by Clint Boyer. Clint Boyer directs Clockworks to take it to North Carolina. At North Carolina, Clint Boyer directs that it come back to South Dakota for alterations and adjustments, not for additional construction as alleged in the appellant's brief. Now we're back with their contacts with the state of South Dakota to finish the bike on the second occasion. That second trip in was significant to Judge Smith, and appropriately so, because we're back with several communications in and out of the state of South Dakota. Now we're in the fourth and fifth month of this transaction. Clint Boyer himself directed it back to South Dakota. Clint Boyer then directs it back to North Carolina. So we've got Phoenix to Daytona to Mankato to North Carolina to Mitchell to North Carolina, all the communications from all over the United States into Davison County.
Are you suggesting then that because of all these other states which are peripherally involved, that the most significant contacts are with South Dakota?
The test is minimal contacts. The standard here, and I argued to Judge Smith, is it's significant and it's overwhelming. And so if you look at the minimal contacts that Daktronix gave to the jurisdiction of an out-of-state company, in this instance, you've got all those contacts. Marshke isn't close. That's the sale of a car in Montana. Weber isn't close. That's New Mexico cattle sale of goods, and we pointed that out. Fiore, the U.S. Supreme Court case, somebody has some money taken from them, airport security in Georgia, and tried to sue them in Nevada. And so all the standards that the appellant has cited are correct. You look at the long-arm statute, and you look at due process. And due process is broken down by the three tests as to what the defendant himself, Clint Boyer, did in this jurisdiction. Yes, he availed himself of South Dakota. The trial court found that he knew that the bike was coming into South Dakota, and he himself and all his entourage continued numerous communications as found by Judge Smith, and those are all inferences and facts found that are before the court today. So the minimum contacts, yes, significant contacts, all the contacts. Where would this case belong? Going to exactly what you're saying, Chief Justice Gilbertson, is where would you bring the action? Florida, because the bike was asked to be delivered there. Arizona, because there was one conversation there with these three individuals that, yes, did witness the oral conversations. Minnesota, because the bike was purchased by Mr. Boyer and directed into South Dakota. North Carolina, because the bike passed through there twice. Or the state of South Dakota, where 5 months of activity between two businesses, a very sophisticated nationwide, worldwide businessman, Clint Boyer, and a small company in South Dakota that does exactly what they're going to do. So the day in court will determine what the agreement is. This is just simple jurisdiction. So this goes so much further than Daktronix.
All right, Mr. Theater, this is an oral contract, and as you just characterized it, there were numerous connections back and forth with Florida and wherever. Do we know where the contract actually was entered? Or where, at what point was there a contract, and what's the situs of the contract?
Well, that's a super question, and an oral contract, Justice Everson, is it's going to be a series of communications and transactions from Arizona through, when we get done with discovery, I suspect communications came in from 15 to 30 states to Clockworks, and by the time it came back for the second adjustments and pictures and directions of Clint Boyer telling my client what to do, the agreement was completed. There isn't any question, and the court found there was an agreement, and all parties agreed to it. They sent a check into South Dakota for the painting of $5,000. So at the end of all the communications and the acceptance of the goods, is that would be the last definition of what should be delivered. And it was delivered as ordered by Mr. Boyer. Now when you say, when was the first time the consideration for the agreement was agreed on? There's going to be a trial for that, we sure hope, in the state of South Dakota, because as all oral agreements are before the court and otherwise, is both sides will have a different version of what is the consideration line within the contract. So I would say that almost all the negotiations were in the state of South Dakota, because once they left Arizona and they went over and got a bike in Mankato, everything took place in South Dakota. We just didn't have Clint Boyer in Mitchell, Davison County saying, this is the bike I want. That's not required for minimal contact. It's not required for jurisdiction, and never has been. And as many of our courts talk about in modern day business, to say that it's significant or difficult for someone to come into a state forum and defend himself when he spends his whole year in all but probably 50 jurisdictions would be ludicrous. So the agreement needs to be resolved by a court and a jury in the state where it clearly took place and both parties intended it to be. So we're before the court, everybody agrees with what the law is, meaning the cases. Everybody agrees with the three criteria. When you look at due process, there is no question on the long arm statute. And so it's Mr. Hagen says sometimes two parties can disagree, but I guess I'll add Judge Smith and his 22 findings to our argument, because of course that is what we're in front of the court on, with all the inferences drawn in favor of my local company that did exactly what Mr. Boyer directed him to do, which was deliver a bike.
What about the fact that Judge Smith did a number of times in his reasoning look at the plaintiff's activities as opposed to the defendant's activities?
Well, once when you, in his discussion, He certainly did in his written findings. I'll take you through the 22 of them, and you can look at them yourself. It goes to what Clint Boyer was doing. So when you say, what did the other side of the contract do, Clockworks? They stood in an oral conversation in Arizona. They went to Mankato as directed. Yes, they were in Mitchell all 5 months working on the bike. But the court didn't hang their head on there's only jurisdiction because Clockworks is in Mitchell. There wasn't any discussion on it. I guess the only disagreement I had with Judge Smith is I said it's a slam dunk, and he told me it was a closer call. So maybe that's part of this. I hope you think I have still some reason left so I can appear in a few more years again. But no, I don't have any argument with Judge Smith's 22 findings. And under a 12B motion, as the court well knows what the standard is, we got a lot going in our favor under that 12B statute and the appellate standard of review. Happy to take you through why each of this South Dakota availment, South Dakota cause of action, South Dakota substantial contacts, the three elements under due process, but that's these facts we just talked about. Is South Dakota, South Dakota, South Dakota is inside each one of those, to include the conversation in Phoenix, Arizona, where, yes, we'll take the bike back, the only place we do business, Mitchell, Davison County. So South Dakota is in each part of the communication and every act. All 22 of the findings have to do with Clint Boyer availing himself of South Dakota and a South Dakota company. The breach occurred in South Dakota because he didn't pay, and he certainly had plenty of connection with South Dakota because we got 22 of them cited by Judge Smith. So that's the minimal context that we urge this court to allow this case to go forward with the judge and the jury deciding all questions of law and fact. But I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Any questions for Mr. Thieler from the bench? If not, thank you, Mr. Thieler.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Hagen, you have 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. The reason Mr. Thieler's happy with the 22 findings of fact is because he drafted them, and this Mr. Judge Smith didn't change a whit of them. But I think if you take a step back and ask, why are there findings of fact in this case to begin with? It was submitted on the affidavits. There was no credibility determinations. Now, I know Judge Smith wanted them to give the court, I think, because he expected that this might be appealed, and he did say it was a close call. But the findings of fact, we dispute particularly 20 through 22, and take a close look at them and compare Brian Clock's affidavit, which consists of 12 statements. If you look at Brian Clock's affidavit, there's only one where he references a communication with Clint Boyer. Paragraph 3 references a communication with Brooke Phillips of Total Performance, Inc. Total Performance, Inc. isn't a defendant in this action. Paragraph 4 does the same thing. Paragraph 6 is the only statement where he makes reference to this phone call and text message.
Now, Mr. Thieler says, if not South Dakota, where?
Well, that's the significant relations test is the choice of law. If not South Dakota, where is the choice of law as to what law governs the contract? North Carolina is where the defendant lives, and you can always sue a defendant where he lives without any constitutional concern. The 14th Amendment is in place because we're concerned about our liberty interests, where we're being, if I'm sued in Oregon because I have a conversation with them, I not only have to go to Oregon and incur the expense to do so, but I think there's a just concern about having a local team. You don't have to play an away game unless you have contacts with the forum. So I think there's a very significant difference between the choice of law that governs the contract, and I'd submit that it's North Carolina. But that's choice of law as to the choice of the law of the state that applies. But jurisdiction is a different question. You can always sue Clint Boyer in North Carolina. That's where Brian Clock's performance was completed. He didn't complete the performance when he took a picture of it and sent an email to someone and said, is this what it's supposed to look like? Clearly, he completed performance when he delivered the goods, and he did so not in South Dakota. All of Clint Boyer's activities were directed, were took place outside of the forum, and they were completed in Florida. So I think we have a very sizable disconnect between actions that Clint Boyer took, all of which occurred outside the forum, and actions that the plaintiff took. And if you look at Judge Smith's analysis, I think you can put aside the findings of fact and conclusions of law because you exercised a novel review anyway. But if you look at the analysis in the hearing transcript, what drove the decision was plaintiff contacts within the forum. Justice Thomas in Walden versus Fiore said it's impermissible to permit the plaintiff's contacts to drive the jurisdictional analysis. And that's what happened here. It's the defendant's liberty interest is at stake. I think the suggestion that these emails are part of the negotiation, on page 16 of our brief, we cited three cases from the Eighth Circuit that said these types of communications don't suffice. Justice Smith himself said if it was just about the communications, if it was just the emails and the phone calls, we wouldn't have jurisdiction. And what drove him past the point to find that jurisdiction exists was the fact that Brian Klock or his company did work on Clint Boyer's motorcycle here. And that, I think, is Walden versus Fiore makes clear that's wrong. That's inverting the analysis and treating plaintiff's contacts as a basis to hail the defendant here. So the answer is sue him in North Carolina. If you think there's an agreement there, sue him in North Carolina. Unless the court has other questions.
Any questions from the bench for Mr. Hagan?
Thank
you. If not, thank you, Mr. Hagan.